Chapter 41. Family were once large landowners, and so were dairymen Billets. And the Debbie houses, who now are Carters, were once the Debeau family. You find such as I everywhere. 'Tis a feature of our county, and I can't help it. So much the worse for the county. She took these reproaches in their bulk simply, not in their particulars. He did not love her as he had loved her hitherto, and to all else she was indifferent. They wandered on again in silence. It was said afterwards that a cottager of Wellbridge, who went out late that night for a doctor, met two lovers in the pastures, walking very slowly, without converse, one behind the other, as in a funeral procession, and the glimpse that he obtained of their faces seemed to denote that they were anxious and sad. Returning later, he passed them again in the same field, progressing just as slowly, and as regardless of the hour, and of the cheerless night as before. It was only on account of his preoccupation with his own affairs, and the illness in his house, that he did not bear in mind the curious incident, which, however, he recalled a long while after. During the interval of the cottager's going and coming, as he had said to her husband, "I don't see how I can help being the cause of much misery to you all your life. The river is down there. I can put an end to myself in it. I am not afraid. I don't wish to add murder to my other follies," he said. "I will leave something to show that I did it myself on account of my shame. They will not blame you then. Don't speak so absurdly, I wish not to hear it. It is nonsense to have such thoughts in this kind of case, which is rather one for satirical laughter than for tragedy. You don't in the least understand the quality of the mishap. It would be viewed in the light of a joke by 9/10 of the world, if it were known. Please oblige me by returning to the house, and going to bed." "I will," said she dutifully. They had rambled round by a road which led to the well-known ruins of the Cistercian Abbey behind the mill, the latter having, in centuries past, been attached to the monastic establishment. The mill still worked on, food being a perennial necessity. The abbey had perished, creeds being transient. One continually sees the ministration of the temporary outlasting the ministration of the eternal. Their walk having been circuitous, they were still not far from the house, and in obeying his direction she only had to reach the large stone bridge across the main river, and follow the road for a few yards. When she got back everything remained as he had left it, the fire being still burning. She did not stay downstairs for more than a minute, but proceeded to her chamber, whither the luggage had been taken. Here she sat down on the edge of the bed, looking blankly around, and presently began to undress. In removing the light towards the bedstead, its rays fell upon the tester of white dimity. Something was hanging beneath it, and she lifted the candle to see what it was. A bough of mistletoe. Angel had put it there. She knew that in an instant. This was the explanation of that mysterious parcel which it had been so difficult to pack and bring, whose contents he would not explain to her, saying that time would soon show her the purpose thereof. In his zest and his gaiety he had hung it there. How foolish and inopportune that mistletoe looked now. Having nothing more to fear, having scarce anything to hope, for that he would relent there seemed no promise whatever, she lay down dully. When sorrow ceases to be speculative, sleep sees her opportunity. Among so many happier moods which forbid repose, this was a mood which welcomed it, and in a few minutes the lonely test forgot existence, surrounded by the aromatic stillness of the chamber that had once, possibly, been the bride chamber of her own ancestry. Later on that night Claire also retraced his steps to the house. Entering softly to the sitting room he obtained a light, and with the manner of one who had considered his course he spread his rugs upon the old horsehair sofa which stood there, and roughly shaped it to a sleeping couch. Before lying down he crept shoeless upstairs, and listened at the door of her apartment. Her measured breathing told that she was sleeping profoundly. "Thank God," murmured Claire, and Eddie was conscious of a pang of bitterness at the thought approximately true, though not wholly, so that having shifted the burden of her life to his shoulders she was now reposing without care. He turned away to descend, then, irresolute, faced round to her door again. In the act he caught sight of one of the d'Urberville dames, whose portrait was immediately over the entrance to Tessa's bedchamber. In the candlelight the painting was more than unpleasant. Sinister design lurked in the woman's features, a concentrated purpose of revenge on the other sex, so it seemed to him then. The Caroline bodice of the portrait was low precisely as Tessa's had been when he tucked it in to show the necklace, and again he experienced the distressing sensation of a resemblance between them. The check was sufficient. He resumed his retreat and descended. His air remained calm and cold, his small compressed mouth indexing his powers of self-control, his face wearing still that terrible sterile expression which had spread thereon since her disclosure. It was the face of a man who was no longer passion's slave, yet who found no advantage in his enfranchisement. He was simply regarding the harrowing contingencies of human experience, the unexpectedness of things. Nothing so pure, so sweet, so virginal as Tessa seemed possible all along, while that he had adored her, up to an hour ago, but a little less, and what worlds away. He argued erroneously when he said to himself that her heart was not indexed in the honest freshness of her face, but Tess had no advocate to set him right. Could it be possible, he continued, that eyes which as they gazed never expressed any divergence from what the tongue was telling, were yet ever seeing another world behind her ostensible one, discordant and contrasting? He reclined on his couch in the sitting room, and extinguished the light. The night came in, and took up its place there, unconcerned and indifferent. The night which had already swallowed up his happiness, and was now digesting it listlessly, and was ready to swallow up the happiness of a thousand other people with as little disturbance or change of mien. XXXVI, Claire arose in the light of a dawn that was ashy and furtive, as though associated with crime. The fireplace confronted him with its extinct embers, the spread supper table, whereon stood the two full glasses of untasted wine, now flat and filmy, her vacated seat and his own, the other articles of furniture, with their eternal look of not being able to help it, their intolerable inquiry, what was to be done. From above there was no sound, but in a few minutes there came a knock at the door. He remembered that it would be the neighboring cottager's wife, who was to minister to their wants, while they remained here. The presence of a third person in the house would be extremely awkward just now, and, being already dressed, he opened the window and informed her that they could manage to shift for themselves that morning, as he had a milk can in her hand, which he told her to leave at the door. When the dame had gone away he searched in the back quarters of the house for fuel, and speedily lit a fire. There was plenty of eggs, butter, bread, and so on in the larder, and Claire soon had breakfast laid, his experiences at the dairy having rendered him facile in domestic preparations. The smoke of the kindled wood rose from the chimney without like a lotus-headed column. Local people who were passing by saw it, and thought of the newly married couple, and envied their happiness. Angel cast a final glance round, and then going to the foot of the stairs, called in a conventional voice, "Breakfast is ready." He opened the front door, and took a few steps in the morning air. When, after a short space, he came back she was already in the sitting room mechanically readjusting the breakfast things. As she was fully attired, and the interval since his calling her had been but 2 or 3 minutes, she must have been dressed, or nearly so, before he went to summon her. Her hair was twisted up in a large round mass at the back of her head, and as he had put on one of the new frocks a pale blue woolen garment with neck frillings of white. Her hands and face appeared to be cold, and she had possibly been sitting dressed in the bedroom a long time without any fire. The marked civility of Claire's tone in calling her seemed to have inspired her, for the moment, with a new glimmer of hope. But it soon died when she looked at him. The pair were, in truth, but the ashes of their former fires. To the hot sorrow of the previous night it succeeded heaviness. It seemed as if nothing could kindle either of them to fervor of sensation any more. He spoke gently to her, and she replied with a like undemonstrativeness. At last she came up to him, looking in his sharply defined face as one who had no consciousness, that her own formed a visible object also. Angel, she said, and paused, touching him with her fingers lightly as a breeze, as though she could hardly believe to be there in the flesh the man who was once her lover. Her eyes were bright, her pale cheek still showed its wonted roundness, though half-dried tears had left glistening traces thereon, and the usually ripe red mouth was almost as pale as her cheek. Throbbingly alive as she was still, under the stress of her mental grief the life beat so brokenly, that a little further pull upon it would cause real illness, dull her characteristic eyes, and make her mouth thin. She looked absolutely pure. Nature, in her fantastic trickery, had set such a seal of maidenhood upon Tess's countenance, that he gazed at her with a stupefied air. Tess, say it is not true. No, it is not true. It is true. Every word? Every word. He looked at her imploringly, as if he would willingly have taken a lie from her lips, knowing it to be one, and have made of it, by some sort of sophistry, a valid denial. However, she only repeated, it is true. Is he living? Angel then asked. The baby died. But the man? He is alive. A last despair passed over Claire's face. Is he in England? Yes. He took a few vague steps. My position is this, he said abruptly. Thought any man would have thought that, by giving up all ambition, to win a wife with social standing, with fortune, with knowledge of the world, I should secure rustic innocence as surely as I should secure pink cheeks. But however, I am no man to reproach you, and I will not. Tess felt his position so entirely that the remainder had not been needed. Therein lay just the distress of it. She saw that he had lost all round. Angel, I should not have let it go on to marriage with you, if I had not known that, after all, there was a last way out of it for you, though I hoped you would never, her voice grew husky. A last way? I mean, to get rid of me. You can get rid of me. How? By divorcing me. Good heavens, how can you be so simple? How can I divorce you? Can't you now I have told you? I thought my confession would give you grounds for that. Oh, Tess, you are too childish, unformed, crude, I suppose. I don't know what you are. You don't? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.